celebrating Vancouver's underground rock music culture for 3 days of shows from incredible local and touring artists, the second annual Unreal City Festival takes over the Rickshaw Theater and the Russian Hall, January 15th to 17th. Featuring local artists like Worry War, Jody Glenham, so let it keep raining. CJSF chart toppers Devour, and the Houseplant. Scene veterans By a Thread. Liner Spencer Krug of Wolf Parade, Sunset Rubdown, and Moonface. This unique festival finds bands and music artists upstairs, while downstairs you get access to the coziest grandma's living room style lounge in the city, with DJs, hot food, drinks, on-site tattoo artists, and more. The second annual Unreal City Festival, January 15th to 17th at the Rickshaw Theater and the Russian Hall in East Vancouver. For passes, go to unrealcity.rocks or head to CJSF Music on Instagram to win tickets.
Diverse, independent, yours. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your host, Brandon, and I'm joined today by Hale. Today, our show is on AI and nostalgia. These are two very distinct topics, very distinct themes. One is a sort of psychosocial phenomenon. It's a memory phenomenon. The other is a technological phenomenon. It's obviously also a social phenomenon, but it's not obvious how we would relate nostalgia and AI. I don't actually want to give too much of a preamble to why we are discussing these things, because there is an inciting incident where I want to just jump in right now to start wedding these two themes together, crossing these two strings. I don't know exactly how long after, because the date that I have for, I'm looking at a Facebook post right now that Hale sent me probably not long after it was posted. They don't stay in the stream of being shared very long after they're shared. So it couldn't have been much longer than after November 13th, 2024. The account that this is from Uncovered History. I imagine that's how it found its way. It's a photograph, so it's being shared with you as a sort of historical document, but obviously found some things to say about it.
A little bit of context on finding this photo we're going to be talking about, which is kind of the jumping off point for our discussion today around AI and nostalgia. I don't really use Facebook that much. I really pull back from social media, but I do still technically have Facebook, and I guess a few months ago I was on there occasionally, and I had in the past followed a number of historical photos and artifacts pages. These are pages that are basically for hobby interest. You know, they might be sharing old photos. Those photos might be very personal. They might be famous photos, right? You know, they might be photos that historians are posting and commenting on because they're something particularly relevant or interesting. Or they might be things that everyday people are posting, you know, that they found in their old photo albums or whatever. They want to share something from a deep family past or artifact related or whatever, right? So I follow, I think, from long past a few of those pages. And because I follow that stuff, I guess, in my feed, you know, in the kind of ever-running, you know, kind of scroll of stuff that Facebook creates for me, personalized essentially for me, or my profile version of myself, whatever, I get recommends new kind of similar content, right? New of these photographs, artifacts, whatever. And I got recommended this photo that we're going to be talking about today. And I remember clicking on it in particular because, as we'll talk, it seemed a little weird and it had a lot of engagement. Like it was, you know, lots of upvotes, lots of comments, very active.
Yeah, it's very, very active for a Facebook post. I mean, as far as Facebook posts can obviously get massive, this one has 5.8k comments, and that's just comments. It has 57k reactions or likes. Facebook used to have likes, now they have all kinds of things. But I just want to start by kind of describing this photograph, because this is obviously the first thing that you see, and then it comes with a description as well, so I'll read the description after. But the photograph itself is a kind of, it's like a Polaroid style photograph. It's a bit browned out, it's a bit washed out, it's like a 70s era photograph, but it's more obviously 70s from the style and the themes in the photograph. There are four women in the photograph, kind of around a rugged wooden table, and the table has a bunch of red beer cups on it, and they are in a sort of straw grounded, it's night as well. It's illuminated because there's a flash for the camera, but it's a party, and they're dressed in kind of like washed out blue jeans. They've all got bandanas on. Some of them have them around their head, others around their neck. They've got like dirty blonde kind of all, they have long hair. They're all smiling and laughing and kind of, they're enjoying each other's presence. It looks like a 1970s keg party.
It was a good time.
Yeah, it was a great time.
It was a good time to be, it was a great time to be alive.
Definitely back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the, just for our listeners, a description of the photograph we're going to be talking about. But it also does come with a specific description as well, and I'll read that now. Keg parties in the 1970s were the ultimate expression of youth and freedom. These gatherings were more than just about the drinks. They were about friends coming together, the music that filled the air, and the feeling that the night could go on forever. It was a time when life was simple, and the good times rolled on with every shared laugh and song. Reflecting on those memories, we're reminded of an era where connection was real and fun was pure. Just to start kind of anticipating what we're going to be getting into, because we're going to get into the comments now, which are, they're revealing in a lot of ways, but one of the first kind of like foreshadowing moments is that this description also has a link to, I suppose, Uncovered History's website. But when you click on it, it doesn't go anywhere. It goes to a broken WordPress blog. So whatever they were linking to, they didn't sustain for very long, or they didn't have an interest in keeping it maintained. So this is kind of, for as much engagement as this has produced, as impactful as this will be for some of the people in the comments, it was apparently just a kind of one and done deal for the people who posted it. So some of the posts or some of the comments in this are, I guess I'll just read the top two. So the first one reads, "The women were gorgeous and acted like women." And the second is, "The girls actually had normal hair. It wasn't 14 different colors, and it was beautiful and long." So some of these people, when they are encountering this, they are contrasting the 1970s with today in a kind of contemptuous way, I suppose. They
kind of put contemptuous nostalgia.
Yeah, a bit contemptuous nostalgia. It's not just that the 1970s were a good time, but they were better than today. Not like, mm-hmm. you know, not like women are today or something. But not all of them are as, yeah, they're not all the as charged. So some are legitimately nostalgic. So those were the days, my friends, and we thought they'd never end. We were blessed. Nobody had camera phones back then. What happened at our keg party stayed there, though a few legends were made. Absolutely no other period of time that I would have wanted to grow up in. An exciting time in America for us in our youth. Love, music, social change, higher consciousness. So there are people here who are seeing this post and genuinely engaging with it as a piece of kind of, as a jumping off point for nostalgic memories that they may or, you know, maybe may not even have had. there is a post that reads, "Those are extremely gorgeous girls that almost look like quadruplets. Hope they had a good life and would love to see a current pic of them all." So the photograph does... there are a few uncanny things about the photograph.
I want to say, here's the thing. He wants to see a current pic. Well, in a way, that is the most current photo you're ever going to get.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the first or the highest rated comment says. It says, "That is a current picture. Ha, ha, ha." And, well, why would that be? That seems really strange. If this is a photo of a keg party from the 1970s, why would this be a current photo? And some of the other commenters are filling us in as well that this is an AI and artificially, or it's an image generated by artificial intelligence. And there are some telltale signs of AI-generated images. Usually they're in the hands, which are quite intricate, and the fingers get all messed up. The hands in here are cleverly disguised in certain ways, but where they do show up, they're pretty rendered pretty well.
That's a clue for our listeners too, if they're coming across anything similar to this, and they're not sure if it's AI or not. Oftentimes, at least at this point with this sort of produced content at this level, a lot of times what they'll do in the creation of the AI, whether it's from basically having literally a person behind, you know, directing the content's creation, or it's an automated process, the hands will be kind of obscured or hidden in some way or another to kind of avoid that obvious takeoff. And I should say, just for our listeners coming in now, like we keep talking about this photo again, as Brandon's already described it, but again, it's a photo that I found online shared to me as ostensibly a historical photo of a keg party in the U.S. in the 70s with a bunch of pretty blonde girls dressed in very 70s clothing standing around. Another interesting thing, though, I remember from the photo, just little oddities, is that they have like red Solo cups, like classic party cups, but they say like they have like cola written on the side of them or something like that, like in the Coca-Cola font, right? Like it's a weird, like why would a red Solo cup have Coca-Cola brand, like fake Coca-Cola branding on it? Like you get those sorts of weird things that kind of are telltale signs, oddities. But for the majority of people, it would seem, who are looking at this, especially on somewhere like Facebook, you know, people are fooled. And I think this is a historical photo. Again, like this was shared on my feed. This isn't something that I selected. And to be honest, you know, not that I am some incredibly discerning individual, but I immediately picked up that it was fake, that it was AI. But what was more interesting was people's reactions to that. And also, too, I think the thing that was kind of eerie is why are we seeing AI content that's ostensibly historical and is clearly designed to elicit a very particular kind of nostalgic feeling in particularly in a particular kind of demographic, right, of people? Like what is, rather than it just being some weird image or advertisement thing or whatever, why are we seeing these? And there's other ones too, like, you know, it, unfortunately now, places like Facebook and social media are full of these fake historical photographs that often the charge behind them is often to elicit, like we were kind of talking about earlier, a kind of, you know, almost, you know, frustrated nostalgia, right? Like things were better back then, right? Look how much better things were. And why is that the sort of messaging? Is that the sort of thrust and theme of the content that this sort of fake historical stuff that's being created?
Yeah, it is interesting too. I mean, you know, people don't have to have any kind of academic credentials to post on Facebook by any means, but it is interesting. I do think that it is interesting that an account dedicated to posting historical, if not historical documents, then, you know, just being a Facebook account about history for people who are interested in history, there is this idea of like a primary
you know, a primary document or like a piece of source text or something like that, if artificially generated pieces of text or documents or photographs or anything like that are finding their way into this. I mean, this is not, again, not an academic stream of evidence at all, but that it could find its way in here and present itself as like a primary piece of 1970s evidence. This is what it was like in the 1970s. I mean, the AI is drawing on tropes of the 1970s. You know, it's got the washed out jeans and the bandanas and the beer cups and whatnot. But as you notice very quickly, I assume at like a cursory glance, just seeing it and then being moved in to investigate further, it's fake. It's not real. But the other thing too about this that, so I did want to also mention too that I was reading a description of the photograph. You can't discern because there aren't fingers that are messed up or irregularities in some of the products. But as you explore this stuff, you can also see when text has been generated by AI, and it takes a bit more discerning. I think the telltale sign here is that there's a consistent theme that is being aimed at, where you can tell sort of what prompted it to produce this stuff or produce this text, right? So produce me, you know, here is an image, write a description of this, or write a description of a 1970s keg party with the aim of provoking a nostalgic response. So most of the description is in the past tense, which is interesting, but it specifically talks about memories, reflecting on those memories, we're reminded of an era where connection was real and fun was pure. So very intentionally, this post is driving at a nostalgic response, right? Which is interesting.
And it's also a negative kind of nostalgia response, and we'll get more into the nostalgia component later, but it's interesting that that sounds AI generated, just so our audience knows. I'm going to go and assume that the description is AI generated as well, because it sounds like it was written by a moderately talented, 14-year-old, who, if they were asked to give a description of this photo and asked to make it nostalgic, right? It's okayly written, but it's like so intensely on the nose. But the point I think that's really interesting is, again, it's the negative component is what it's not saying and what it's taking away from the present, which is basically connection was real back then, not like now. You know, the fun was pure. Things were pure. And purity is always a kind of dog whistle type word. It was pure back then. It's not like diluted and sick and toxic like today, right? And so it's interesting when making those positive statements about the past, there's obviously a kind of negation going on with the present, right? A kind of negative response. The present is not pure. The present doesn't have connection. The present isn't fun, right? And therefore, obviously, something is wrong with today, right? And that's what makes these kinds of things very interesting, but also this theme is so consistent among a lot of this AI stuff that one has to wonder I personally don't think it's a coincidence.
No, right? Yeah.
And you and I have... Oh, no, go ahead, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't think it's a coincidence at all. Yeah. And we have discussed, I think, in the past, some of the I'll just use the word triggers for tapping into virality. What gets you to be put out there in terms of a post like this, right? And I think that negative aspect does contribute a lot. I think that something nostalgic like this will in itself be liable to be shared around, because we have to explain, well, first of all, this landed on your feed, you know, so it has gone viral. It is, it's being shared around a lot. And if you look at the numbers, it's, as they say, it's doing numbers. So this is getting a lot of engagement. I think nostalgia would be sufficient for it to get lots of engagement, but it's very telling that, and you can see in the reactions in some of the comments that I mentioned, there is this negative or kind of contemptuous nostalgia where they're playing on a kind of simmering anger, which is more traditionally used to create virality. Usually you see posts that outrage, injustice has been done and stuff like that. But,
you know,
it's, yeah.
Just as a little anecdote about this, and this is no surprise that, like, I'm sure all of our listeners, well, maybe, you know, thankfully, maybe some of you are not familiar with social media somehow. It would say this on the radio. But, you know, I'm sure all of us are more or less familiar, at least tacitly familiar, with the fact that outrage drives social media. Outrage has very clearly become the kind of emotional currency of social media. And, you know, that outrage always has to be new. It always has to be changing. That's the thing about outrage that's kind of, you know, we've been thinking about lately and reading some stuff, watching a few interesting things. It's one of the interesting points that a lot of people make is that outrage is incredibly powerful and spreads incredibly quickly and burns out very fast, right? Like, it always has to be cycling new. And I was actually, as a little anecdote, I was actually watching, happened last night as I was kind of couch potatoing, I ended up watching a documentary that just came out on Netflix about Jerry Springer, the show Jerry Springer. I'm sure you're familiar, and maybe most of our listeners would also be familiar with the what was originally just a bland, supposed to be another bland daytime talk show that before they got canceled, basically they decided to Hail Mary it and turn it into a complete trash fest. And it turned into the one of the most popular shows in American history for years, right? And they had the original producers and stuff on the show, and they basically said the same thing. They said, we realized that outrage and anger and drama, they got views. Now, this is in the late 90s and 2000s, so it's not internet views, it's television ratings. But the structure is the same. Principle's the same. But they also mentioned how they also realized that the outrage would always have to be changing. They couldn't just have people, you know, spouses cheating on each other coming on the show. They couldn't just have landlord and tenant disagreements on the show. They constantly had to be moving the bar more and more extreme or in different avenues, because that was the only way to keep the outrage kind of going, to keep it interesting, to keep it flavorful. And so, again, you kind of see, I think, in a way, you see, at least part of it to me is, you see this AI functioning, however it is, wherever it's coming from, slipping into all sorts of different facets of discourse online and popping up all over the place and creating, you know, various kinds of outrage, whether it's explicit, oftentimes, or I think in the case that we're talking today with this image, the 1970s beer keg, it's more implicit. Obviously, the photo, the AI-created photo, and the description, ostensibly, like, on a very surface-level reading, seem very kind of nice and reminiscent and all this kind of stuff. Obviously, as we've been talking, let's be clear, the implicit side is anger, frustration, outrage of various kinds about the present, not effectively not being this past, which we'll get into.
Yeah, it's outrage, but it's comfortable enough that you can share it on your Facebook feed. Nostalgia allows you to have an emotional reaction in that way without expressing anything because anger always kind of demands a change, right? And in a certain way, nostalgia does as well, but it seems more content to just wade in the fact that things aren't as they could be. It's like, I'm thinking of Dostoevsky's Underground Man, when he says, you know, we all love a good toothache, you know, when we really lean into how painful it is, when we're nostalgic, we really lean into how great things could be or how great things were. But we really mean something like, well, you know, stuff kind of sucks right now.
You know, you and I had an interesting, and we, for our listeners, we've got a really, both of us think, a really interesting little reading of nostalgia that will bring more kind of discussion into that concept, especially in its modern formations and executions. But, you know, you and I had a little interesting point before the show. We were talking about, you know, there's a significant difference between nostalgia and deja vu, right? Like, the phenomena of deja vu, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, is I'm pervading through some sort of situation, and I have this feeling that I've been there before. It's a feeling that I was actually in this. I have some sort of, in a weird way, as much as deja vu often feels more opaque and harder to put your finger on, it also feels like it's pointing at something that's more directly real, true. I was in this position. This position reflects something that actually happened. Whereas nostalgia is far more of a fleshed out narrative about something that in most cases, many cases, isn't even real. Like, it's a fictional story that we're telling ourselves about a past to have a contrast with the present.
That is interesting, yeah. I mean, when you think of deja vu, I think of you find yourself in a situation where if you tried to put it together, you really could maybe find one step ahead and one step behind, where this memory that you had is real, or where you really remember it from before. Like, you feel like you can do the memory work, right? And all memory involves work. But with nostalgia, it's an alternative narrative of the past, or it's an alternative of the present supplemented by the past, because every narrative has a past, present, and future, right? So that is interesting. The other thing that we mentioned when we were discussing the difference between between deja vu and nostalgia is that deja vu kind of happens to you, right? You just are, you know, you're walking down the street and you just remember. It just happens kind of randomly. Whereas nostalgia is memory work. Again, we're doing, you know, all memory kind of involves some kind of work, and we're doing memory work when we're being nostalgic. But it's always provoked by something in the environment. And I think that goes to the heart of one of the things that we want to touch on when we're connecting AI and nostalgia, not just AI, but it's the fact that nostalgia is triggered by some kind of memorabilia or souvenir or something that evokes the past. Deja vu is very rarely evoked. It can feel like it's being evoked, but if you think about it psychologically, it just kind of happens to you. But you can construct the conditions for nostalgia, right? And you have to do that. You have to carefully select your artifacts, your characters, your narrative, and you have to couch it in a certain way that it provokes this nostalgic reaction. The thing is, nostalgia is a constructed phenomenon. AI, an automated process, can automatically produce this. Nostalgia has material conditions.
We read quite an interesting article that you suggested on AI. Slop, the author's name escapes me. It was written by ChatGPT.
No, this is for a New York magazine by Max Reed. It's called Drowning in Slop. A thriving underground economy is clogging the internet with AI garbage, and it's only going to get worse.
My whole Facebook feed, I hadn't been on in a while, and suddenly it was a lot of this kind of stuff. Whether they've been historically related or not, it was a lot of stuff that I was like, I think this is AI, like this, these videos seem AI, these photos are being recommended as AI, you know, I'm getting weird political articles that seem like they're written by nobody with weird images, like, you know, whatever it's going to be, right? You know, nostalgia is just one avenue in which this AI thing is operating, and I think it's probably one of the most important, which is why I was like, we'll talk about this a little bit more. It seems like there's this wider structure going on of the internet in general, and especially social media spheres, becoming just, you know, drowned, as the author says, in slop, in just generated fake phony garbage. Ostensibly sometimes gets a lot of engagement, but even that engagement might